ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're continuing our reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the 8th canto, chapter 22. Bali Maharaj surrenders his life. Today we're in text 5. Tvam nunam asuranam naha parokshaha paramo guruhu yo no aneka madandanam vibrangsham chakshur adishat tvang nunam asuranam na parokshak paramo guruhu Yono ne kamadan dhanam Vibrangshang chakshuradishat Tvangnunam asuranang naha Parokshak paramo guruhu Yono ne kamadan dhanam Vibrangshang chakshuradishat Tvangnunang asuranang nahang Parokshak paramo guruhu Yono ne kamadandhanam Vibrangshang chakshuradishat Please chant. Tvangnunam asuranang naha Paroksha paramo guruhu Yono neka madandhana Vibrangshang chakshuradishat Tvangnunam asuranam naha Paroksha paramo guruhu Yono ne kamadandhanam Vibrangshang chakshuradishat Tvangnunam asuranam naha Parokshak paramo guruhu Yono ne kamadandhanam Vibrangshang chakshuradishat Tvangnunam asuranam naha Parokshak paramo guruhu Yono neka madandhanam Vibrangshang chakshuradishat Tvangnunam asuranam naha Parokshak paramo guruhu Yono ne kamadandhanam Vibrangsham chakshuradishat Vaishnavis Tvangnunam asuranam naha Parokshak paramo guruhu Yono ne kamadandhanam Vibrangsham chakshuradishat Mekamadandhana Irang Shang Chakshuradisha. Anyone else? Tangnuna Vasaranamna Parokshak Paramo Guruhu Yodone Kamadandhana Vibrang Shang Chakshuradishat. So, synonyms: Twam, Your Lordship. Nunam, indeed. Asaranam, of the demons. Naha, as we are. Parokshaha, indirect. Paramaha, the supreme. Guruhu, spiritual master. Yaha, your lordship. Naha, of us. Aneka, many. Mada andhanam, blinded by material opulences. Vibrangsham, destroying our false prestige. Chakshuhu, the eye of knowledge. Adishat, gave. So, Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse: since your lordship is indirectly the greatest well-wisher of us demons, you act for our best welfare by posing as if our enemy. Because demons like us always aspire for a position of false prestige, by chastising us, you give us the eyes by which to see the right path. Please repeat. Since your lordship is indirectly the greatest well-wisher of us demons, you act for our best welfare by posing as if our enemy. Because demons like us always aspire for a position of false prestige, by chastising us, you give us the eyes by which to see the right path. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Bali Maharaj considered the Supreme Personality of Godhead a better friend to the demons than to the demigods. In the material world, the more one gets material possessions, the more he becomes blind to spiritual life. The demigods are devotees of the Lord for the sake of material possessions. But although the demons apparently do not have the Supreme Personality of Godhead on their side, he always acts as their well-wisher by depriving them of their positions of false prestige. By false prestige, one is misguided, so the Supreme Lord takes away their position of false prestige as a special favor. Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya, Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine, Namaste, Saraswate Devi, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvashesha Sunyavadi Paschati Deshtarane, Om Agyana Timurandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya, Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina, Tasmai Shri Gurvay Namaha, Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtang, Stapitang Jaina Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam, Vandehang Shri Guru, Shri Utapada Kamalam, Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha, Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanbatam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Batang Shah. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindabaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vancha kopaturubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanang pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in the morning, it's a very nice tradition and I hope you keep going. We've been reading, you know, various scriptures just to inject some philosophy right in the beginning of the day. So this morning, Naikarma Prabhu read a very nice verse. It reminded me a lot of that chapter from the second canto. Who remembers what the topic was? Okay? Not everybody was wide awake. So he was reading from the second canto, fifth chapter, which is called The Cause of All Causes, and he read text 3. In that chapter, at the beginning, Narad Muni is inquiring from Lord Brahma, which fit right in with what I was going to say today. Fits right in. It reminded me, the very first verse of that chapter, that's chapter 5 of the second canto, is a verse that just kind of stuck in my mind. It's not what we would say one of the big preaching verses by any stretch, but it just... So Narad Muni is inquiring from Lord Brahma. He says, Deva Deva Jagat Jagat Datur. Deva Deva Namastestu Bhuta Bhavana Purvaja Tadvijani Ajnanam Atma Tadva Nidarshanam. So Narad Muni is the firstborn son of Lord Brahma, and he's inquiring from his father because he looks around, the universe is empty, Brahma is there, he's asking him, what's going on? In essence, he's saying that you seem to be the supreme here, but I want to know the truth. So it says, Deva Deva, O Lord of the demigods, or best of the demigods, Namastestu, I beg to offer my obeisances. Bhuta Bhavana, you are the generator of all living entities. Purvaja, but you are self-born. You don't seem to have any mother or father anywhere. I don't see anyone. No grandparents. Just you, Dad. Tadvijani Ajnanam, he says, please give me this knowledge, Atma Tattva Nidarshanam, that gives direct darshan, you could say, direct information about the soul and the super soul. So this is what we're supposed to be inquiring about. We know from the Bhagavad Gita that four types of people come to Krishna consciousness or approach Krishna. Those who are inquisitive, those who are in distress and need of money, or those who are actually wise. So no matter which category you come from, well, we should say the other three, because if you're wise to begin with, then you're on the right path immediately. But if you came out of distress, or if we came out of, because we're not well, we're in need of money, we're inquisitive, we're meant to progress from that stage. Otherwise, if we don't consciously progress from that stage, then once our inquisitiveness is satisfied, okay, now I know what the Hare Krishna movement is all about, boom, then I'm gone, back to regular material life. Or if I came out of distress, I'm getting beaten down by the material energy like anything, and then I come and I shave up and I put on the robes and I chant. And after a few months, it doesn't take very long, you start looking bright-faced and the distress is gone and you start feeling like a normal person and like I'm back in charge of things and I don't need to hang around here anymore. Boom, you're gone. Maybe a few months, a few years, whatever. But the point is, if you don't progress from that platform, then the danger is there of getting washed out. Maya again starts going, psst, psst. Why are you hanging around these weird people? Come on. Hang out with normal people. You know, why are you wearing that uniform, kurta, dhoti? Let me give you a different uniform, t-shirt, jeans. Everybody's wearing some kind of uniform, right? If you're not wearing a military uniform or a policeman's uniform or a business uniform, suit and tie, although here in California hardly anybody wears suit and tie, but you wind up wearing some kind of uniform anyway. It's not that if you don't wear the Hare Krishna uniform that you're going to be what? You're going to wear some other kind of uniform. So Narad Muni is pointing out what we're supposed to be inquisitive about. The truth, Atma Tattva Nidarshanam, that truth that gives us information about the soul and the super soul. So this is Lord Brahma's position. Being Purvaja, the firstborn in the universe, he, by meditation, received knowledge from Krishna. That's what this painting is pointing out. And we should all, every time we see these paintings, we should offer at least mental obeisances to the artists who under Srila Prabhupada's directions. It's not easy. You think a painting like this is easy to produce? Where is Kumari Gopi? She's learning how to paint now. Ask her how difficult it is to learn how to paint nicely. To sit down and paint something like this under Prabhupada's directions, it wasn't mental speculation. It's not like, you know, these Picassos and people like that who sit down and paint whatever the heck they feel like painting, and then they, you know, people go, ooh, ah, look at those lions, and, you know. No, it's not like that. This is window to the spiritual world, because it's painted directly under the guidance of a pure devotee of the Lord who's on the spiritual platform, seeing, having darshan of these things, so he could describe clearly how it should be painted. And beautifully done, all of these paintings, beautifully done. So here, it's showing Lord Brahma has appeared on the lotus flower. He's alone in the universe. He doesn't know what's going on. And so he starts to meditate because he hears the syllables, tapa. And being highly advanced, generally speaking, Lord Brahma is the most advanced soul in the mode of, we say passion, but he has to be beyond passion. He has to be actually in goodness to attain that position. He may be in charge of the mode of passion, but he has to be extremely good to get this position of being Lord Brahma. And it's stated in the scriptures that if no soul is qualified, then Krishna himself will take the position. It's such an important position. So Lord Brahma here has meditated on Krishna, and Krishna has revealed to him the knowledge within the heart. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. This is mentioned in the very first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. From within the heart, the knowledge is revealed. So then, from Lord Brahma, everything is coming. It's a little, you'd have to look at the painting in the book to see all the things that are written there that are coming from Brahma. But on the very top row, it's showing that everything is coming from him. This business of being attached to your body, that consciousness is coming from Lord Brahma. Vanity, all these different things, as well as all the Vedas and musical ability, everything is channeled through Lord Brahma. This is where it's coming from. So we're very fortunate that we're in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And we are meant to absorb the knowledge that's coming from Lord Brahma in the cyclic succession. And that purport to that verse, that first verse of the fifth chapter of the second canto, Prabhupada says that to inquire, just like Narad Muni was inquiring from Brahma, to inquire from a bona fide, to acquire from and receive knowledge from a bona fide person is the what is the word he used there? The business of the cyclic succession. So we're very fortunate to be connected to this cyclic succession to get perfect knowledge. Not to speculate. Because by speculation, one can never reach the absolute truth. It's not possible to speculate your way to the absolute truth. We're dealing with inconceivable energies, potencies, activities beyond our scope of understanding. When something is beyond your scope of understanding, you cannot speculate and come to a conclusion about it. It's not possible. But it's very popular nowadays to do that. Everybody, this is the age of rampant speculation. Everybody thinks that I can figure it out myself. Just give me the basic information. I'll figure the rest out myself. But we can understand philosophically that you cannot make something that isn't so just by speculation. And the opposite. I'll give you an example, just like the moonshot. Right? To this day, it's still debated. Some people say they went, I believe they went, and other people say I don't believe they went. But it's not a question of whether you believe or not that makes it happen. There's one truth. Either they went or they didn't go. So let's say they did go to the moon. All of your doubting and saying that they didn't go doesn't change that fact. And just the opposite. If they didn't go, just all of your conviction that I really feel that they did go won't make the fact change. You see, there's only one fact. Either they went or they didn't go. So belief has nothing to do with it. So similarly, when we come to God, people have the audacity and the foolishness to always speculate. Well, I believe in God or I don't believe in God. God's existence does not depend on our speculation. It's not that we can take a poll and if 80% of the people on the planet believe in God, then God definitely exists. Or just the opposite. If we take a poll and 80% of the people say, I don't believe in God, then God doesn't exist. God's existence has nothing to do with your belief or disbelief. Either God exists or he doesn't. One fact. Either he does or he doesn't. And your believing or not believing cannot change that fact. You see the point? So, but people will continue to speculate. And make money on that speculation. A few nights ago I saw on our local PBS station, they were doing a fundraising drive. And they had as their top attraction, Deepak Chopra. Very, very polished speaker, very, very intelligent, very knowledgeable. But his presentation was, the title of his presentation was, and it's also the title of a book he wrote, The Future of God. This is his presentation, The Future of God. As if God's future depends on his presentation. First of all, we know, following the cyclic succession from Brahma, that God has no past, present, future. God is existing, will exist, always existed in the past. There's no past, present, future for God, because he's always there. This is our understanding. Similarly, the living entity ultimately has no past, present, future when we're back in our right position. When we're in a material world covered over by the material energy, then yes, we immediately get captured by and pushed by time, call it a time energy, and therefore we see in terms of past, present, and future. I look at my past and either I regret things that happened or I am nostalgic about what happened in the past. I see my present, and again, I may be happy or not happy, and I'm always planning for a brighter future. In my mind, things are always going to be good. Or, if I'm in a depressed state, things look very bad for the future, whatever. But I'm always thinking in terms of past, present, future. But when we come to transcendence, that's not the case. Everything was perfect. Everything is perfect now, and everything will continue to be perfect. Actually, it gets better and better and better. Ever-increasing happiness, ever-increasing knowledge, everything ever-increasing on the spiritual platform. So just the title alone is audacious, the future of God. But then, like I said, he's a very polished speaker, very intelligent. He's actually a medical doctor and really, really brilliant presentation. It wasn't obvious if he was reading from a script. There could have been a prompter somewhere out there that he was looking at, but his demeanor is such that you couldn't tell. And just rattling off, quoting this quote from Einstein and that quote from Schrodinger and that quote from, you know, Planck, and just on and on and on, and very, very polished. People are mesmerized when a person like that speaks. So what is his ultimate point that he's making? His ultimate point is, no matter what religious background you come from, no matter if you're an atheist, whatever, even if, again, you're from some tradition, forget those deities like Jesus and Krishna and Shiva, and he actually mentioned Krishna twice. So forget all those deities. They are just gateways to the ultimate reality, spiritual reality, eternal consciousness that you can tap into to become happy. And I can teach you how to do that. Just buy my book, and my book will teach you how to tap into that super consciousness so you can be happy now, you can be peaceful now, you can fulfill all your desires now. It's very difficult for people to see beyond a presentation like that. It sounds so plausible. But coming in our tradition, we would say that this is not a fact. And even just from ordinary, intelligent, philosophical viewpoint, if they would think, but people don't think, you see? Our God brother Nis Chinchin is very fond of saying that people like, the real mantra that people live by is, or they want to live by, simple living, no thinking. That nobody wants to think. But if you would actually think about it, we're conscious, right? Consciousness always means a person. Wherever there's consciousness, there's a person or personality there. Cats are conscious, and we know cats have personalities. Not every cat is alike. Each cat has its own personality. Dogs, horses, whatever you look at, wherever there's consciousness, there's personality there. And anybody who deals with animals knows that it's only a fool would think that animals don't have personality. That every one of them has personality. So wherever you look, wherever there's consciousness, there's personality. Yet, somebody like Chopra would have you believe that there's a supreme conscious entity, but there's no personality there. Hogwash. Hogwash. How can you have consciousness and no personality? Explain that. Explain that. How are you going to have consciousness and no personality? It's not possible. But that's what they say. So we would say, hogwash. Coming in the cyclic succession from Brahma, we know that ultimately there's a supreme person, Krishna, who manifests through his avatars, his expansions, ultimately coming out of Mahavishnu, we see lying here, who's breathing and all the universes are coming out. And in each universe, he again expands as the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then expands as the super soul. So, this is what Narad Muni was inquiring about. Atma Tattva, that knowledge that gives us information about the soul and the super soul. And so this is a very clear picture that we're receiving in our disciplic succession. Extremely clear. Krishna is there, eternally in the spiritual realm, and he expands the material energy, which is sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest. And the reason why it expands, because if you're saying that there's just one homogeneous, conscious, spiritual existence, as Topa and others would have you believe, then what is it that forces that homogeneous, spiritual consciousness to break up into individual parts and become covered over and exist in this material? What could cause that? They don't have an answer for that. If you ask them, they don't have an answer for that. Why does non-impersonal, homogeneous spirit consciousness break up into individual? Because they're saying that when you die, you just go back and merge into that consciousness. Hogwash again. It doesn't work like that. It does not work like that. So we have a very clear picture. We're very fortunate to have that clear picture. This is the picture that we are individual eternally. Krishna says, Mamai Vangcha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhutta Sanatana. Eternally, we are individual parts and parcels. And by our own volition, our own free will, we've turned away from Krishna, turned away from God. So he provides a cosmic Disneyland where we can come and try to imitate him. Everybody here, consciously or unconsciously, covertly or overtly, is trying to be God, to be numero uno, center of everything. And when we see that it can't work, it doesn't work, is when I order you to do something, you may or may not do it. I can't force you. Even if I try to use force, then you're simply plotting how you can get me, eventually get me out of there, just like there are so many dictators in the world still. But the citizens are simply plotting how to get rid of them. They're not necessarily voluntarily following these guys. But this is the situation. We fall into the material realm, and then we simply transmigrate one body after another. Even within this lifetime, we're transmigrating one body after another. Every one of us here had a different body 10 years ago, 20 years ago, what to speak of some of us 50 years ago. We remember the events and occurrences that from 50 years ago, but that body that we were doing these things in is gone. It's long gone. So that is proof that you continue to exist despite the change of the body. The body is always changing. And the ultimate change, final change of any particular material body is death. And then again, taking another body out of 8,400,000 species. Again, very, very clear information presented very precisely. 8,400,000 species one may accept or not accept. That's up to you. But that's what the Vedas say. Jalaja Navalakshani Savara Laksha Vinshati Krimayu Ruja Sankhyakya Pakshinam Dashalakshanam Trinksha Lakshani Pashava Chatur Lakshani Manisha. Very, very precise. 400,000 human-like species. 3 million types of beasts. Everything very precise, accept or not, that's up to you. Very precise knowledge. So sometimes, we know again from the scripture, once in a day of Brahma, Lord Krishna himself comes to this material world, to this planet Earth that we're on, came 5,000 years ago. And even the demigods sometimes get bewildered by this. Lord Brahma, even though he's the firstborn and he was inspired by Krishna, and he knows things as they are still, when Krishna came, because it's so mind-boggling that this boy, cowherd boy in Vrindavan, is actually the supreme controller of everything. So Lord Brahma, as you know, played a trick on Krishna, stole his calves and cows, and then when he came back after a split second by his time, but it was a 1 year by earth time, Krishna was still there with all the cows and boys. So Lord Brahma realized that he made a mistake. Krishna showed him his so many four ambitious forms emanating from his body. So Lord Brahma realized his mistake and he paid his obeisances. Now Lord Brahma, he penned one work called the Brahma Samhita that only one chapter exists, the fifth chapter. Lord Chaitanya in his tour of South India, he found this in Travancore state, the Adi Keshava temple. He found this one chapter and this is what we have. And to understand the depth of Lord Brahma's knowledge. But he didn't only bewilder Lord Brahma, he bewildered even his intimate, pure devotees like Yashoda. We know this past time, Krishna was accused of eating dirt, and Mother Yashoda said, well, all your friends are saying that, even Balaram is saying that, but you're saying you didn't, so show me your mouth. So Krishna opened his mouth, and within his mouth, she saw all the universe, the whole universe and all the planets, stars. She even saw herself in Krishna's mouth. So this is Krishna. This is God. God never has to become God. God is always God. If you think you're not God now, but you can become God, then immediately you're disqualified. Obviously, you're not God. God is always God. From the lap of his mother, he's God. So Krishna then, later on, he's showing his universal form to Arjuna. And this is very important. Why does Krishna do that? Prabhupada explains, so that later on, if some rascal, and we know there's so many of them who came, especially out of India, so many gods have come to the West, I am God, you know, and so Prabhupada said, if some rascal comes and says that he's God, you ask him to show his universal form. So this is why Krishna displayed to Arjuna. And even Lord Chaitanya, who is Chana avatar, covered incarnation of Krishna, he didn't declare himself to be God openly, but still even he showed universal form. Again, it's so important to establish again that if you are God, then you have to be able to display this universal form. Just like Bali Maharaj experienced, that Vamanadeva, he expanded his body to the point where he could see clearly that everything was in the body of Vamanadeva. Everything. So this is another expansion or display of the universal form. So Lord Brahma again, he penned this Brahma Samhita. And every morning we're reciting two verses from the Brahma Samhita. So I thought we would conclude by just meditating on one of those verses. It's meant to be a meditation. This is what we're supposed to meditate on every day. Not just we come to greeting, we chant the verse, and then we go away and, you know, space out. No, we're meant to meditate on this. So everybody can sing along. Venum kvalantam aravindanalayataksham Bharavatam samasitam buddhasundarangam Kandarpakoti kamanya visheshashobham Govindam Adipurusham Tamahang Bhajami. So Lord Brahma is saying there, Govindam Adipurusham. I worship Govinda, the Primeval Lord. And in this particular verse, Venum Kwanantam. He's adept at playing on his flute. So flute and Krishna go together. All the deity dressers know that. Isn't it Radha Kripa Mayi? If you go on the altar and either Dwarkadish or Dwarkanath doesn't have a flute, immediately, where's Krishna's flute? Who forgot Krishna's flute? So Krishna and flute go together. Venum kwanantam. Aravinda dalayataksham. And he has beautiful eyes like blooming lotus petals. So when we look at Dwarkadish, we should see his eyes appear like blooming lotuses. Very beautiful. Isn't it? Who would not be attracted by those eyes? And then, Barhavartam Samas, his head is bedecked with peacock feather. Krishna and peacock feather go together. Same thing. If you go on the altar and you don't see a peacock feather on Krishna, immediately you want to know, who forgot Krishna's peacock feather? figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds. Many times people ask, why is the sky blue? Mommy, Daddy, why is the sky blue? And then Mommy and Daddy have to scratch their head to come up with some answer. So similarly, they ask us, when they see our books, why is Krishna blue? How do you answer that? Anybody ever ask you that question? Why is Krishna blue? How would you answer? That's how he is, exactly. Exactly. Krishna in his original form, by his choice, is blue. But he expands himself in unlimited other forms and they have different colors, like Balaram is white. And Lord Chaitanya is golden, and so different. But in his original form as Krishna, he is blue by his choice. And his beautiful form is attracting millions of cupids. Right? His form is attracting. So this is our meditation. Every day we should be walking around meditating like this. Krishna's playing his flute. His beautiful eyes like lotus petals, wearing peacock feather, and his threefold bending form is attracting millions, beautiful, attractive form, attracts millions of Cupids. Everybody in the material world is smitten by Cupid, this romance business, but Cupid is attracted to Krishna, because Krishna is the most beautiful. Madaram, madaram, vaparasya vibho, madaram, madaram, varanam, madaram. Madhugandham mridusmitan etamaho, madaram, 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 madaram. That the form of Krishna is very sweet, madaram, madaram, two sweets. And his face is sweeter still. But the sweetest thing is his smile, which is like honey sweet. This is the meditation of the devotee. So we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Yes? You had a question, Jared? And then you. Jared first had his hand up.
Thank you for class, Prabhu, and the nice pictures and paintings. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about the importance of, or you know, if it's important to accept the. You were explaining like the Vedic literature is a very precise, you know, 8,400,000 species of life and how the material world is created. So some people have doubts, and I was wondering if you could speak about how submissive we should approach the Vedic literatures.
Yeah, it's a good question. Doubts are natural, but one should get those doubts eradicated by approaching an authority. Don't just ask anybody on the corner. You know? The Vedic tradition is, again, you approach an authority, submissively render service, and then the answer will be given. The answers are there. Prabhupada used to say, something that seems mysterious or mystical is just because you don't know how it works. It's just like if you go to a magic show, there's some really, really good magicians. Illusionists, they even call them. They can do things that, like, whoa, you can't even... But obviously they know how it's done. So for them it's not an illusion. They know what they're doing. So similarly, anything that seems mysterious or mystical, it's just because you don't know how it's done. But somebody knows. Krishna knows. And Krishna reveals to others. So this, now, anything that we don't understand that doesn't seem clear, yes, we should get it, those misgivings, those doubts eradicated. And Krishna even says to Arjuna, beginning of the 7th chapter, that I will give you knowledge that will eradicate all of your doubts. So it's understood that when we're in a covered state, we're doubtful about this, that, the other, about going to the moon, about anything. We're doubtful because we lack the knowledge. So the way to eradicate doubt is to get perfect knowledge, and that perfect knowledge is coming down in our disciplic succession. It's a very easy concept to understand. Unlike the scientists who say that out of matter comes simple life, and it becomes more and more complex, and now you have, lo and behold, human beings who are the pinnacle of creation. No. Starting out with the most intelligent, Krishna, then he inspires Brahma, and then that knowledge comes down. So that's perfect knowledge, and we just have to tap into that knowledge, not tap into the universal consciousness. See, always trying to use, they want to use the universal consciousness instead of surrendering to it. We want to surrender to the person in charge, not use them. So with that submissive mood, we can inquire and get the knowledge that's coming down. So whatever you don't understand, whether it's you personally or anybody else, direct them to find someone that they can accept as an authority. If you don't accept the person as an authority, then don't disturb them with your questions. Because then it becomes just, you know, you say, I say, whatever, and nothing happens. Find someone that you can accept as an authority in this field, the field of spiritual knowledge. It's not that because somebody's advanced in spiritual knowledge, you go to them to ask about nuclear physics. No. But if you have questions, doubts, in the line of spiritual knowledge, then you find an authority in that line and inquire submissively. And the answers are there. We should have that much faith. That Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He knows everything. He's in, that was the verse this morning, by the way. Narada Muni was telling that to Lord Brahma, that because you could know everything, past, present, and future, then just like a person holding a walnut knows the walnut, then you know everything. So similarly, Krishna is beyond Brahma. He certainly knows everything. And that knowledge is coming down. So all doubts can be eradicated if you approach the right source. That much faith we should have. And then one more and then we'll stop. I think Eric, right?
Alex,
sorry.
My wife asked me why Krishna was blue. And this is I don't want to be disrespectful, but I said because he's the true blue blood.
Well, actually you're wrong, because it's specifically stated that Krishna has no veins. This is in Ishopanishad. The Supreme Lord has no veins. The bodies that we have, material bodies, they have veins carrying blood and whatnot, and they're temporary. But on the spiritual platform, Krishna has no veins. There's no difference between Krishna's inside and Krishna's outside. You see? Pure spiritual existence. No difference between the inside and the outside. There's no, you know, organs, internal organs or anything like that. It's pure spirit, complete. So no, your answer is actually wrong. Krishna doesn't have any blood. He has no veins. He is blue by his own volition, by his own choice, his own free will. And again, when he expands into other forms, he takes on other colors. That's by his choice also. So that's the answer. The real answer to that question, why is God blue, why is Krishna blue, is because he wants to be blue. Okay, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya, Gaur Bhaktivrinda Ki Jaya.
In the class, and you tell your wife why you say that.
Then you get equal.